This call is being recorded.
Welcome to a cup of a winning cup, you guys. And today with me, I have Lothlan. Now, if you hear me fangirling in this episode, you will know why. Because Loth has been one of the top content creators. And you guys think I create a lot of content? Yeah. I'm not creating half as much content as I should. But Loth actually specializes in video, but on the occasion, he loves a good podcast. So we're going to be geeking out. Video, podcasting, you name it, he's pretty much done it. So I'm going to let Mr. Loth take it away. And then I'm going to let him share his story, and we're just going to have a natural conversation like we always do. So, Loth?
Hey, Wynn. It's great to be here. It's great to talk to you, and thanks for that introduction. Yeah, we were deciding video, audio, and I was just thrilled to just do an audio podcast, of course. I love live video, and I think it's great for people to have video recordings of their podcasts that they can use for clips on social media or to put on YouTube and so forth, or live stream their podcast. But it's also nice not to even have to turn on the camera or set up your lights or get ready or any of that stuff. It's often refreshing to just be able to focus on the conversation and not all the video production side of things. My background is radio, so this is very natural to me to just have an audio conversation.
Yeah, just to have an audio conversation. No, I find it funny that one of the top guys in the video space says to me, "Can we just do a natural conversation, please?" And I'm like, "Sure, whatever." No, I find it easy. I'm like, "Oi, Loth." I'm like, "Oh, whatever." I'm like, the easier it is for my guests, the better. And so, Loth, what made you switch from the radio background to a full-time video and podcaster?
Well, I had been in radio for about 12 years, and I left radio. I was doing on-air work in radio, and I've done everything from hosting shows to being an anchor, reporter, and I was kind of done with it, and I was doing something else, and I started getting more active on social media. I was a late bloomer when it comes to social media, but once I got into it, I kind of took to it, and I stumbled into a platform called Blab in 2015, not even knowing really what it was. But I stumbled in there, and it was like, okay, this is kind of like talk radio heaven, except with these webcams. This is very interesting. And everybody was talking about business and marketing and personal development, and I thought it was fascinating. And I really fell in love with broadcasting again. My idea originally was just to watch what other people were doing and to amplify it, to cover it. Perhaps Livestream Universe would be like the social media examiner of live streaming. It would be something that gave out tips and covered what was happening in the industry. And I was a guest on a couple of shows or called into a couple shows. And once I got my feet wet, I said, well, let me host the show. That'll help the website along. And of course, once I got a taste of hosting shows, I fell in love with broadcasting. I fell in love with hosting and interviewing again. And so that was how I went about doing it. A webcam was just part of doing business on Blab, so to speak. It was part of having a show there. And it's to this day, I don't always look at the camera. I don't always have, that perfect, eye contact with the camera. But I kind of brought a little bit of that talk radio feeling over to the video side. The camera's looking in on what I'm doing, and I try and produce the show with some graphics and different things, switch shots and so forth. But ultimately, it really is 90 to 95% of the value is in the conversation. So
yeah,
when we're doing even an audio-only podcast like this, this is where the value is. If the audio were to go out from a live stream video, there's very little value if it's a talking head interview type of live stream. If the video went out but the audio stayed on, you still have a show. And yeah, you know, so people can ask like we did, hey, do you want to do video or not? Nobody can ask, do you want to do audio or not? Because with no audio, there's really nothing to consume after a few seconds.
Exactly. There's nothing to consume. Now, don't you guys go be Googling Blab. Blab, unfortunately, bit the dust.
Yes.
And so I'm like, oy. So do you think, and now this is a question I've been wanting to ask you of all people for many, many months now. Do you think StreamYard will ever compete with Blab?
I think it's a very different platform in a very different circumstance, context. Blab was a platform that was self-contained.
Yeah.
In a way, Blab was a little bit like Clubhouse in that you went in there and you did your show or you had your conversation within Blab for other people in Blab, and there was discovery in there and people jumped from room to room, and it was very much of and for the platform what you were doing. StreamYard is a live streaming and live video production tool for going to one or more destinations. You can multi-stream to up to 8 destinations at one time with StreamYard. But things have changed. While people can use StreamYard certainly to go into certain closed environments, they can do virtual events behind the paywall using StreamYard and custom RTMP, which lets you connect to destinations that might not have a built-in integration with StreamYard. For the most part, it's a tool that we use to live stream on Facebook Live and YouTube Live and Twitter and Periscope and Twitch and some of the other major, you know, LinkedIn Live. That's basically what people are using StreamYard for. There is a community, you know, Blab had a great community, a strong community. Yeah. StreamYard has a nice community as well. They've got a strong community on Facebook and a strong group of people who show up for some of their shows. I host one of their shows. They host a town hall on Sunday night, and they have different shows throughout the week. So there is a community aspect of it, but I think it's just a very different time now. When we were on Blab, nothing can really compare to it, although I think Clubhouse in some ways is the closest thing to Blab, except there's no video and there's no recording. So what you do in Clubhouse supposedly stays in Clubhouse, whereas what you did with Blab, you could download the recording and make a podcast or put a YouTube video up or anything else. So those are some of the differences.
Exactly. I saw it the other day when I jumped in Clubhouse. I'm like, this seems oddly familiar. what it was, I was remembering Blab days and Blab and then talking. And so that's what it was. I couldn't, for the life of me, I'm like, the name of what we used to do is escaping me. That's what it was. You hit a nail right on the head. I'm like, this, when I first, no wonder why I walked into Clubhouse my first week and fell in love with it. No wonder why. Because that Clubhouse is the new version of Blab. Now, unfortunately, Clubhouse is not on a computer yet. And unfortunately, Clubhouse is only stuck on the iOS side and not on androids yet, but
right.
We'll see. But no wonder, I'm like, why do I love this app so much? That's it. Because I'm like, I played with the app. I called into a couple shows. I was a guest on a couple shows right. on Blab. So those of us who remember Blab are loving Clubhouse now because it's similar to Blab.
And with a phone, it's even easier. Now, you could join a Blab from your phone, but yeah. the experience was pretty much a computer experience, whereas Clubhouse, you can literally be almost anywhere where you have an internet connection, cell coverage, and you can just jump on. And because it's not being recorded and there's no video, you just go in, you talk about what you want to talk about, or you listen. As a content creator, I have not spent a lot of time in there because I like the idea of I have content from what I do that I can then put on social media and cut up and so forth. I get that there's good conversations and everything, but the great thing about Blab is there would be a show and you would get the recording from the show, and then you would have this after show conversation, which you would stop recording and people would just sit around and talk about things. Sometimes people would open up and talk more frankly than they would during the actual recording of the show and the live stream. And I think that part is where there's similarity with Clubhouse. But it's obviously very different, too, in that Blab would be four people on camera, and then different people would jump in and out to continue the conversation. Whereas here, it's sort of like each person comes on to say their piece, and then the next person steps up, and the next person. It's not quite the same type of talk flow, I don't think, as a Blab.
That's where I was about to head. See, the next person aspect drives me nuts. There are right. days, I walk into Clubhouse. There are days I don't say anything at all. I peace out quietly, you guys, because right. the next, I'm so used to, as a content creator / a podcast host / a podcast guest, I'm so used to, like Blab, holding the conversation. I'm not used to saying my piece and then shutting up, because we're so used to, as content creators, holding the conversation or chiming into the conversation, not these short 15 second, introduce yourself, ask a question, move on.
Right, right. Yeah. I think there's, you don't get to a certain depth of a discussion sometimes, whereas if, like, you and I are having a discussion on Blab, that could go on for an hour and a half, and we might open up a seat and bring in one or two other people yeah. who along the way might sit in for 15 minutes, and we both react to their thoughts and they shared their ideas, and then somebody, you know, they say, well, thanks, and they hop out, and somebody else hops in, and they could stay a half an hour talking about a different aspect yeah. of whatever the topic is. And I feel like Clubhouse prevents that from happening because these rooms get so many people in them, and it's just like everybody comes up and answers that one same question. So the discussion somehow can't get to that next level sometimes.
I personally don't like big rooms.
Yeah.
I personally avoid the big rooms because I have cerebral palsy. And there are days I am in the midst of something having to do with cerebral palsy that I can't click a mic and unmute myself. So right. I'm like, let's just stick to the small room and right. just do what you need to do. It's marketing. But I think those, as I said, those of us who are so used to Blab to hold the conversation, we are not the types to right. To have a 5-second conversation and listen to the rest of it. I'm like, no. We're like to hold a conversation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm not really used to waiting 45 minutes to have 5 seconds to talk.
Yes, exactly. Yes, no, I'm not used to waiting 45 minutes. I'm like, peace out.
Right, right.
Create content or listen to a podcast. Peace out. That's why I love the smaller, more intimate rooms. And I think because of Clubhouse creating clubs now, it's going to be a challenge for those of us who like holding conversations.
Right.
Because we, Clubhouse is Clubhouse. But Blab is, I think that Blab did what it's doing. And now Clubhouse is the big brother to Blab. They're trying, the app developers of Clubhouse are trying to develop something similar to Blab, because maybe they were hiding behind the scenes of Blab. We don't know.
Right, but right.
As long as Blab, because I'm like, well, since you hit the nail on the head, I'm like, why does this app seem so familiar? And that's what it is. I'm like, I am used to this app in a different format. And so I don't know if they were taking a newer, I don't know if they were modeling it after Blab or what they were doing, but we're not, as content creators, we're not used to waiting the amount of time and speaking for 5 seconds and then.
Right, right. No. I guess in that case, I'd rather listen to a podcast than not even worry about having to talk.
Exactly. No. And so what is your biggest lesson that you learned during the pandemic?
I learned that I used to say, you know, live streaming can be helpful for your business. It can be helpful for connecting to people and networking and things. But I was always very balanced. Like, I never gave the view that everybody needed to live stream or that it was some type of must have for people who were in business or marketing. For some people, it would be great. And for some people, it might not be their thing. I guess what I learned is that for a lot of people, it was a lifeline. I mean, for a lot of businesses that had no other way, because they couldn't have customers if they had a brick and mortar business, they couldn't have customers in the store. And live streaming basically was the way that they kept their business going. They maybe had very little online presence before, and now they could sell products and services through building relationships with their customers. But also people who weren't able to see relatives who were sick. Maybe I had a couple people tell me about, one tell me the last time that she spoke to her mother was, and she'd never done it before this way, but she couldn't get to see her. And so they FaceTimed. And another person told me her grandfather, that was the last time she talked to her grandfather, was through FaceTime. So I think live streaming's been one of the positive things that have, and it, not positive like, hey, great, the pandemic's allowed this to explode or whatever. No. It's been a positive thing that we've had. Imagine if we went through this 10 years ago. And for that matter, all these different ways to connect online. It doesn't have to be with video, but with audio conferencing, with the type of platform that we're using now for this podcast. Imagine not being able to have these connections. Yeah, you could talk on the phone, but that tends to be a much smaller network of people you would talk on the phone with. Now you can see people, you can hear people. at the same time as you see them and really have that connection that's just really special. I mean, it's the next best thing to being in person with somebody.
That's what someone said to me a couple of weeks ago. I podcasted, I don't know who's on Clubhouse. They go, well, if this happened in the 90s, we would all be up the creek without a paddle.
Right.
I don't know, because businesses were trying to learn this technology, and I know that they all learn Zoom. I mean, I could teach people Zoom in 2 seconds flat if I
right, right.
And just because I have used it over the years, but people were so afraid of using Zoom, and now they're not.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, people would tell me, oh, I know you do this video stuff and you live stream and all that, but that's not for me. I don't want to be online much, and I certainly don't want to be on camera. And then after working from home and seeing what they're able to do, maybe it's have meetings, maybe it's have sales calls, maybe it's teach their class instead of being in front of the class in a physical classroom. And now they're saying, okay, what kind of microphone should I get? What kind of camera should I get? How can I set this up? I see a lot of possibility for working from home and for, you know, saving from time commuting and just so many different ways that they can use it. It's like, yeah, but you said you'd never. Yeah, but now I see. I was forced to use it.
Yeah.
And now I see the potential in it. And there's just so many people who feel that way now, who just otherwise never would have gotten that kick, I don't think, to get on it.
So now all these, well, I don't want to call them average Joes, but I will. All these average Joes are coming to me and coming to you and coming to every which way, all these content creators, and saying, I have deeper respects for you. Right. On what you do, because I didn't know that Zoom was going to be an integral part of my life. I didn't know that StreamYard, well, not necessarily StreamYard, but I didn't know that YouTube was going to be a deeper part of my life to educate my child or educate myself on what personal protective gear to get. Or, so it's so funny because I was a teacher for 13 years, and I'm starting to get the after effects of when thank you for being teaching because right. of the pandemic. Before the pandemic, people didn't, well, I don't want to say they didn't necessarily care, but now people are starting to think about what teachers did in the classroom, what content creators did as producing podcasts or producing live streams or doing what they did.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that they didn't really realize you could do with this. They thought, okay, this is just, these people want to sit in front of the camera, they're trying to become famous, or they're trying to, you know, build a brand through it, and that's not what I'm interested in. And now they realize all the different ways that they can be productive. And from a teacher's point of view, these are skills you can give to students when they learn these skills that can allow them to be more competitive in the job market as they go out there.
Yeah.
And in fact, what would have been, say, being an expert at, you know, setting up virtual meetings or, you know, doing a podcast or whatever used to be a competitive advantage in a business context, at some point it's just going to be a necessity that if you don't know how to do these different things, you might not get the job versus somebody else or versus 20 other candidates who know how to do these types of things. But just where technology has come. I mean, it's amazing. And one of the things that I thought of when you're telling me the story is, remember when the pandemic first hit and there were all these newscasters who were doing their broadcasts and TV guests were doing their broadcasts from home and their audio was horrible?
Exactly.
Like nothing like what the average podcaster could set up in 3 seconds, right? And you realize, like, they always looked at, oh, these are people in their bedroom, in their basement. Hey, I would never go on TV with that quality audio.
No, I wouldn't. I would. I'm a journalist, and I will be finishing up a journalism degree here in the next couple months.
Right.
I would never go on. Well, Skype drives me nuts anyway. But who was it? I was watching Stephen Colbert, and he just did a terrible job on Skype. I know that everyone was trying, but for me, it's like sound quality. Please, my goodness. I'm speaking to you guys using Uber Conference and MacBook Air as we do this podcast interview without my headphones. But still, at least Uber Conference has a better quality. And then, of course, I will send it to my editor. But these news reporters and news rooms have got to step it up if we go through this again. If we go through another lockdown, again, these high-profile news reporters have got to step it up. And now you guys are probably screaming at your iPhones, saying, yes, Lynn, yes, Miss Journalist, we're trying to step it up. And I know it's difficult, and I know you not being on set is difficult, but gee, peace, you're going to drive half the content creators nuts that watch because your sound quality is bad. And trust me, I grew up with a professional sound engineer in my life. So I know about good quality sound more than most. And he, my dad, hated a bad sound. And so it's like that one got drilled in me since I was a child. But I'm amazed how these professional news anchors can do high quality sound.
And, you know, I can understand that they may not have the know-how because it was always done for them, or there was always done another way. But you would think that these organizations that are paying millions and millions of dollars and of salaries to people might have somebody on their team that could get on the call with them, you know, an hour before the broadcast and go, let's check out the mic. What do you have? Maybe we should send you out something different. Just seemed so shocking that, you know, the audio was so bad and there was echoes. And of course, they never want to have a mic on camera when except if they're out in the field interviewing people. But a lot of times having a broadcast style mic, if you're in your apartment, you know, with headphones, it may not look TV, but it sure is going to sound a lot better than talking to a mic that's halfway across the room because you don't want it in the shot, or using some lav mic in a totally untreated environment. There, you know, the sound's going to be bouncing off the walls. It's just so many things that it's like, wow, we could fix this up. You and I could have fixed it up in 2 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. Now, and it's so funny because, well, it's sad and funny. But I like thousands of Americans, lost my job in education due to the pandemic. But it's so funny, my boss and I are still friends. We go a little bit back, not all the way back, but a little bit back. He knows what I'm doing. And he said to me, when at the beginning of the pandemic, because I said to them, do you want me to mask up and come in and help you close up the year? He said to me, we don't have a plan. Well, unbeknownst to me, they were trying desperately to get on Zoom, like every other classroom on the planet, and setting up, I know this because I looked at the calendar, and setting up teachers' in-service days to set up the teachers on Zoom. And I'm like, okay, if you guys would ask me, I will sat with each individual teacher and just did it individually for the whole day or however long it took. No. And I found out from one of my colleagues / friends that teaching on Zoom was or is very, very difficult. And I'm like, yeah, because you people didn't ask me, number one, didn't ask any content creator, number one, how this works. People threw people into Zoom like there was no tomorrow. Why not ask a content creator, hey, Wynn, how does this work? Hey, boss, can you come help us? Nope.
Right.
They wanted to sink or swim, and it's like, excuse me? And I'm sitting back, and you were probably too, like, we could have taught these people in 2 seconds flat if they asked.
Right, and you also may have to adjust how you present material from an in-class situation to a Zoom situation. You have to be more engaging with people because otherwise somebody can just slide up another window on their computer and start looking at something else or playing a game or, you know, checking Facebook or whatever. Okay, so you have to make your lessons like much more interactive. And I mean, I don't envy students or teachers sitting on Zoom all day. I really don't. I mean, you know what it's like when you're in a Zoom meeting with 30 people and there's just a fatigue that sets in after a while. It's like, it's enough of this already.
Enough of this. No, I was in a Zoom meeting this morning and we were talking. It's a book mastermind I'm part of. And I don't go there very often, but we were actually talking about podcasting. And a funny thing is 2 years ago now, I did the same exact class with this same mastermind. And so I wanted to go in there and see what this other person was speaking on. And I just left because I'm like, okay, you're not getting to the point of you're talking about how to sell books, but you're not getting to the point of making a conversation engaging. And I'm like, okay, this
right.
Hit the leave button. I'm like, this is not, I didn't, and it's so funny, and I put, one of the presenters knew I was there, and I don't even think she remembered that I taught this class last year. So when it comes to Zoom and when it comes to FaceTime, when it comes to StreamYard, you can't just be the talking head. People are going to lose interest.
Right, absolutely. You have to engage people. And that's why interview shows I've always enjoyed doing, because there's a natural engagement. You're having a conversation. I think it helps foster conversation in the chat. It helps keep the participants focused as the conversation goes back and forth. But you could also do a solo show without a doubt. And if you change topics and you have different things coming up, that you can say, you know, coming up, we're going to talk about this and then we're going to talk about that. And it keeps people thinking, okay, this is good. Maybe this isn't my thing. Either way, can't wait for that next thing to come up. And then you can always take questions and do Q&A with the people who are watching in the chat on a live stream. Podcast is different unless you're recording it live, but still, people love the conversation and they have to feel drawn in if it's just a recitation of information without you bringing your personality or your own insights or something that you bring that's unique that gets people thinking and gets them engaged. Ultimately, there's just so many choices online and in life right now. Even though we can't go anywhere, there's still the online world is still so busy that it's just never been easier to just switch out of something the second you get bored and switch into something else, another podcast, another show, another Zoom meeting. There's always something going on that you can jump to.
Yeah, there's always something going on. No, and nine times out of 10, people, in my case and in other content creators' case, people don't care if I'm talking about a personal update or interviewing you. They just want to hear me and make sure I'm okay. They just want to make when other people say to people in general, they stick around for the host. I'm like, they do stick around. People don't believe that when I say it or when other people say it. They stick around for the host. And I do a little bit of video from time to time. I'm actually hosting, but not right now because it's on a little bit of a hiatus, but I'm picking back up my YouTube show. And believe it or not, I've been told that my YouTube show, in cooperation with a huge YouTube channel, picks up more views because it's me that is doing it. It's not, and because I already have a following, people want to stick around for me. Right. And people like, they do. And I'm like, yeah, they do. And yeah, and people are amazed when I say I've been in the podcasting space for 10 years. I'm like, what? With your disability, you've been in the podcasting space for over 10 years? I'm like, yeah. And so you got to make, my point being is you got to make the conversation engaging.
Right.
Thank you very much, because people don't have time to listen to an unengaging conversation. At least I don't. And so, Martha, where can people find you if they want to see you, quote unquote, and work with you? Because what, now this, I just gave you guys a taste of what Voss is doing. And I just gave you guys a taste just to see what you guys think. But where can people find you and where can people get a hold of you if they want to work with you?
Sure. The website is livestreamuniverse.com, livestreamuniverse.com. And I'm also Livestream Universe on Facebook and on YouTube. Also, Twitter, DM me. That's a good way to get a hold of me, or just connect with me on any of the social channels and send me a message. It's at the letter I, Ross Brand on Twitter, Ross Brand 1 on Instagram, LinkedIn, I'm there. Wherever you want to, just reach out and say hello or message me through the website. And also, I host StreamYard Connect every Wednesday, 2 p.m. Eastern, and that's on the StreamYard Facebook page and the StreamYard YouTube channel. So if you're around at 2 in the afternoon on the East Coast or 11 in the morning on the West Coast of the U.S. or anywhere around the world, feel free to join us, learn a little bit about what's going on with StreamYard, but we also talk about a variety of different subjects. This week, we're going to talk about text-based editing for video. So instead of cutting the video at the clips and watching each clip, you go to the text and you assemble your video based on the text that you want, and it puts the video clips together. So I'm looking forward to learning about that. Never done that before. And that's what we're going to talk about this week.
I am, so I may have to, when I get my life organized, I may have to sneak in as an audience member just to support and maybe pick up a couple tips there and there. More for support, you guys, than picking up tips. But
would love to have you
to learn from the big guys. And it's always nice to learn from skills that I don't know and skills right. that help me. And Ross, I know you have a couple questions for me.
Sure. So in 10 years of podcasting, what's changed the most for you from when you started 10 years ago to now in terms of how you go about doing an episode or marketing or promoting? In some aspect, things must have changed a lot. The technology's changed. What's something that you feel has changed a lot from when you started until now?
Well, when I started, I wasn't that good at marketing yet because I was afraid to talk about cerebral palsy. So, but now, 10 years later, I'm like, sign me up, all. Post in any Facebook group, get in any clubhouse room, small ones, not the big ones, though, but I'll get and just state my piece. And because of Clubhouse, people have now followed me and want to hear what I have to say, and they have taken it over to the podcast.
Right, right.
So, yes, the second thing is that I finally admitted a couple weeks ago now that I can't edit my own podcast due to my dexterity issues. So right. Someone nicely said, look, when I'll edit your podcast, because it's not because I was too lazy to edit it, it's because I can't edit it. So I'm like, fine. You edit my podcast, I'll do what I do best. And so if you admit what you can't do, it's more likely you're asking for help, which is a good thing. And then you'll be surprised of who says yes and who says no.
Right, right. That's a great answer. One more question I had is, what advice do you give people who might be holding back from doing a podcast because, oh, they feel like they don't have the perfect voice, or they don't have the perfect delivery, or they don't have, you know, expensive equipment? Because a lot of people come up with excuses of why they can't do it or shouldn't do it. And, you know, you've been doing it for 10 years. So there have been ups and downs and hardships and great times with a podcast to stick with it that long. Most people have pod fade in like 5 to 7 episodes or something like that. So what advice would you give to people who feel like, well, you know, I kind of would like to do this, but I don't know if people will like me or if my voice is right or if I have the gear or, you know, something standing in their way from getting started?
Well, the professional podcasters out there are going to be shaking their heads at me. And I know John Lee Dumas is probably shaking his head at me and probably every which way. And yes, Dave Jackson, you're going to be shaking your head at me for my answer. And I don't care. My best advice is use your cell phone and use Anchor as your testing platform, but don't submit it into Apple iTunes, because until you're completely confident, only submit it on Anchor, and then once you say, I'll get the hang of this, then you could submit it to Apple Podcasts and all the podcast players, but only until you are confident and ready to do this.
That's a great advice, because Anchor, you can do with your phone, and you know the microphone pickups on cell phones now are better than ever. They're not that bad, and you can get an inexpensive mic if you want to and plug it in. But I agree with you that Anchor, it's free and it's easy and it's a great place to get started. Do you recommend that people submit to iTunes separately, not just click submit on Anchor, but actually go through the process of establishing their own RSS feed and so forth?
Yes, because when Anchor first came out, I had a podcast on Anchor, and I still have an account on Anchor, and I was testing Anchor out. But I did the submit to Apple Podcast for you, and Anchor of course said, great, we'll take control of content, and I never got it back. So now that I do recommend that they have a Apple Connect in their RSS feed, in their own Apple Connect, just because of Anchor's saying, I want to make it easy. You don't have to make it easy. If you want to see your download stats, particularly in Apple and now Spotify, you're going to have a problem if you submit it to Anchor, and you're going to have a problem because you won't see the algorithms. And so I would recommend Anchor. It's a great platform. Yes, the big professional broadcasters say no, but Wynn is on the fence. Wynn is on the fence of Anchor is a great platform if you use it wisely. If
right.
you use it wisely, if you go in to two left feet land and don't use it wisely, then you are up the creek without a paddle. But if you use it wisely, you'll be perfectly fine.
And then you take the RSS feed from Anchor, if you continue to host it on Anchor, and you submit that yourself, or then you choose to go to one of the other hosts, and you can take all your content over there and then get your RSS feed from there, if you prefer to do that. But either way, you're submitting it to iTunes or Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all these places on your own. So you have your own, you own your own content, essentially your own data and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, because with Anchor's help, you are scrambling up a tree if you're doing the Anchor way, which is, I'll will submit the content for you and then we'll never see you again.
Then you're locked in, right? I mean, then you can't move as easily.
But what I've found through Buzzsprout is they will transfer it from Anchor to Buzzsprout. And that I find amazing. I wish some of these other podcast hosts will do it. But if I had to do it all over again and start my podcast all over again, I would wait and use Buzzsprout, honestly, because Buzzsprout is they're a little bit easier for me to see physically. And two, it's all you have to do is click a couple buttons and then you're all over the place. But people are seeming to like Buzzsprout just as much as they like Lipson. In fact, now Buzzsprout is Lipson's competitor. They have, even though they're the new kid on block, they have as many podcasts, or maybe even more, hosted by Buzzsprout as they do with Lipson.
Wow.
And wow. So if I had to do it all over again, it would be Anchor or Buzzsprout, because I like to see what's out there, and with the capabilities now, granted, to each their own on podcasts, but with the capabilities we have now, we can make a podcast thing if we wanted to.
Yeah, yeah. I still use Libsyn, but most of my podcasts that are active are on Spreaker, which I just love their player. I just love their player.
And Spreaker, the little bit I know about Spreaker, Spreaker actually has a live radio function. It used to.
Yeah, they did have a live audio. I assume they still do. I think I still get notifications when people who I follow go live, which is kind of cool. And you can also like download their app on your phone and actually just record yourself. You know, you can record your podcast using their, I don't know whether if you call it software or what, but you can download. You can also download some desktop stuff, I think. There's a lot of different options. I mean, I use it basically to store and distribute the files, but I also do love to embed their player in blog posts.
I wish Lipson, and now I've been told that Lipson is getting a total ban. I haven't seen yet, but I wish Lipson would hurry up and do that total rebrand, because I'm like, okay, how long are we doing this? I haven't seen what they're doing, but I just have to wait and see and be patient like everyone else.
Right, right.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed another fabulous episode, and I hope you guys picked up some tips along the way. That's my hope, you guys. And I will see you guys next week on another fabulous episode. And I hope you guys enjoyed another fabulous episode of The Winning Cup, you guys. Bye. Thanks, you guys.